I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey guys.
Hi, how are ya?
Happy November.
Happy November. Let me ask a hot question. Is it Christmas yet?
To me, yes.
Yeah.
To me, it is. To me, I love Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Thanksgiving food girly.
Yeah.
In that I don't love turkey.
Yeah.
But give me the sides. Give me the dessert.
I will fuck up a green bean casserole. And I've heard that that's a hot take. But I think maybe it's the Midwest in me. We're just casserole fiends.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, that makes you a good date because you can have all the green beans. Because I'm not going to touch it.
I know.
So you can have it.
And you give it to me with that little French onion on top.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, little crispies on top.
Yes.
Yeah, as you should.
But I'm not going to touch that turkey. I'm probably, right. Oh no, not even probably. I'm 0% going to touch that stuffing. I hate stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me physically uncomfortable.
Oh.
Almost as much so as what we're going to talk about later today. And that's saying a lot. I have a really bad time with stuffing.
Yeah, I've heard.
I think maybe it's a sensory nightmare for
me.
Is
it like the stovetop kind?
No,
or
it's all of it.
All stuffing.
It's like I think it's like maybe moist bread. It just really doesn't do it for me. It makes me want to die a little inside.
Oh.
And like everybody I know, I feel so bad because everyone I know is like, you haven't tried my grandma's stuffing. And I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Fuck your grandma.
I was like, she might use the best seasonings, but you don't get, it's not the kind.
Yeah.
It's the thing.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
I do love it. I love the family aspect of it. It's just like, I'm not fiending for the food the way that I am for like, maybe on Christmas, because we can kind of do what you want on Christmas. I feel like you're obligated on Thanksgiving to have certain things. And I don't dig that. But I am a set up for Christmas now, and then we celebrate Thanksgiving with the tree up.
Yeah.
Like, one doesn't take away from the other. I just want to celebrate Christmas longer. Let me have this thing. I am just a girl.
There are only so many days that you get to celebrate a thing, and especially going into, like, the dark months.
Mm-hmm.
I will celebrate anything I can celebrate, and I will celebrate it as long as I can. So I will do both, but I will have like a couple weeks here of I'm going to have my fall garland shit up,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to start bringing in Santas
as
hanging out with the maple leaves. And
as
we're just going to have a little menage holidays, you know?
Yeah. I haven't made a trip to Home Goods yet, but I already know. I already know what it looks like.
Yeah.
I already know.
Do you want to take a Saturday and get Starbucks and either like a pumpkin spice or like a peppermint mocha, a peppy mocha, if you will.
And go to Home Goods.
And go to Home Goods.
And TJ Maxx and Home Sense.
TJ Maxx. Yeah, the big one.
And
you know the one I'm talking about.
I do.
The big one.
And then like maybe like a Joann's Fabric or a Michael's. And we.
And then.
We like make some Christmas gifts and ornaments. Do you want to make ornaments?
Yes. And then
do you guys want to do this?
Stop at the grocery store and get stuff to make homemade margaritas.
Can we have butterbeer too? Maybe watch Harry Potter.
Ooh, we could do that. Or an espresso martini flight.
Are you kidding me? Yes.
That's actually okay. Actually, guys, don't steal this. Don't.
No, 100% steal it. It's great.
I want this to be my birthday theme next year. Teeny bit older and do like an espresso martini flight party.
Oh, that's so cute.
I love it. Anyway.
Well, if you guys steal it, send us your recipes and which ones you liked and which ones you didn't.
Yes, please. Because you can only do so much with a winter birthday. Like every year, I have to figure that out.
I know. Please. And it's just so dark out.
Yeah. And like it's the time of year nobody wants to do anything.
It's true.
And
well, it just means the only thing I want to do is celebrate you.
Oh.
So.
It's nice to have like a little boost a couple weeks after Christmas, like after everything calms down. But then I'm also like, oh, it's only been a couple weeks. Like, give me a little more time.
Yep.
I get like two solid, really good months in a row. And then I'm out.
Mm-hmm. No. And having a fall birthday, I love the fall. It's my favorite time of year. But I also like, it's just like, okay, well, that's all happening at once. So like the rest of the year is kind of, you know.
You just got to get through it.
Like my birthday, anniversary, and favorite months are all at the same time.
Yes. And I get that too, because I had for a long time an anniversary, Valentine's Day, and my birthday within a week.
Yeah, that's
for a long time.
That's too much.
And I was like, I like to be spoiled, but like, I want spread it out.
Yeah.
Please.
Like, could something happen in June?
Seriously.
May, maybe.
What's wrong with June? What's wrong with July? Give me something to celebrate.
Give me something over the... Just spread them out a little bit. So, anyway. Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I'm very excited for Christmas.
I'm pumped.
Michael Bublé.
And Mariah's defrosting in the background.
Yeah.
Actually, she's like almost defrost. She's almost thawed.
Yeah, I mean, she's like, she's been moved to the fridge and she's been there for a while, I think.
She's going to get close to room temp here soon.
Yeah.
So you better start cooking her up. Oh my gosh. When Mr. Abel Dabelson visited, we found a vinyl of the Mariah Carey Christmas CD from like 2004, whenever you that was. Did. And it was so beautiful. I was like, I really want to get this. Because that was probably the first Christmas album I was aware of and bopping to as like its own thing. I didn't get it, but I am really considering going back.
You didn't get it?
No.
You should.
I should. I do love a Christmas vinyl. Like, there's something so nice about, like, I don't know, like a Nat King Cole on the record player.
Oh, of course.
You just get that little crack in the back.
Ugh. As you should.
Okay, actually, I was going to say speaking of, but this isn't speaking of at all. That was...
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, I want to change the subject, I guess. I'm so sorry. I said that we were going as Jaws, and I talked about Clint. That's not his name. It's Quint.
Well, when I was listening to it later, I was like, is it? I thought it was Quinn. And you said Clint, and I was like, okay, maybe I was close. And then we were just both wrong.
Yep.
It's Quint.
We were so close and yet so far. A very public apology for that. To you all, to good friend, dear, sweet love of my life, Emily, to everybody that I've wronged with my actions, I am deeply sorry.
Yep.
But
canceled.
I know. And so soon after the comeback, too.
You almost had it. It was over in the first 15.
Which, so sad.
You hate to see it.
You take a halftime one time.
You just hate to see it.
But so yes, so sorry about that. And I did have one other thing I wanted to talk about last week that I forgot about.
Hit
which
me.
Was my reading.
Ooh.
Because as you guys know, for the last 2 years, my goal has been to read 10 books. 2 years ago, I passed it and I did 11. And I was ecstatic. This year, I'm... currently actively finishing my 24th, but I have read 23.
What?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
23.
Ma'am.
Eating them up. Loving it.
Okay.
And I have read some interesting ones. So it is interesting. I had to branch out a little bit in my genres.
Mm-hmm.
My lovely partner gave me a no murder for a little bit rule. And I was like,
yeah,
but there, nothing else is interesting. Like, you want me to what? Read a fluff book? That's just porn.
It's true.
Which I did learn. And oh my God, why is it just porn?
I've never... Oh, you mean like the smutty...
Yeah, but I didn't think that's what it was. Like, I found something that was like, she's coming home to her family farm. And then it was like, part-time cowboy. Ooh. And I was like, I'm just trying to work. I'm trying to work and I just wanted to read a stupid book that didn't have to do with somebody being tortured for once, God forbid. And you're like moaning in my ear for an audio book that's just porn. Wild. So as a part of my exploring of genres to find something.
So what were the other 20 books?
Well, there was the cowboy. There was the... No, I'm kidding. Most of them were murder books. And a lot of them are just like mystery.
Yeah,
like
fiction.
I want a detective. Like, I want to sort through clues kind of thing. But one of the ones that I most recently read that I actually loved was called Husbands and Lovers by Beatriz Williams.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating. It's like there's two different POVs and it's about a present day woman whose son has like kidney failure, I think. And also her like ancestor, like a family heirloom, and how they connect. And so it changes POV from today to like Cairo, Egypt, like right after the Second World War.
Ooh.
Which is fascinating. And I didn't expect for it to be like deeply impactful, but I did find it very impactful. I was just trying to find a fluff book and I found something cool and I was talking about it. And it was like, why does everything I read end up being kind of devastating in some way? or smut. And by that, I mean one out of 24, you guys. And I didn't know.
Sure.
I didn't know.
Okay.
I should have known, to be fair.
Abigail.
Looking at the title, I should have known. I didn't know. I just thought it was going to be a little horse girl book. Okay.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, she was doing cowgirl, but anyway. interesting, because that got me into Egypt. And like sort of, I find Egypt fascinating. Also watched National Treasure yesterday, which is really getting me into like wild history vibes.
Okay.
It's a little unhinged and I'm kind of loving it.
Yeah, we love Nick Cage.
But all of that brought me here today.
So the only heads up I've gotten about this episode was maybe I won't want to eat.
You certainly won't want to eat. I'll give all my trigger warnings, and there are plenty, but okay. You should know this will probably make you feel a little queasy at some point. So
excellent.
I'm just going to get right into it. Yoo-hoo! Pod's on. Hi, hello, and welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Oh.
It is so good to be back. And after everything we just talked about, that is how we came to today. And thinking about my first full case back, I wanted it to be timely. An interesting dive again, now that we're refreshed and back into it. And this led me to a case I'd never heard of, which to be honest, like I really should have heard about it by now, but I hadn't. So between the connections to Thanksgiving and Egypt, I found my way to the murder of Bill Nelson.
Okay. This doesn't sound familiar to me either.
I hadn't heard anything about it. But today we're talking primarily about Omima Nelson. As always, just to shout out some sources at the top, I wanted to highlight Black True Crime Podcast, which did a really great coverage of this case. I also used a hell of a lot of the LA Times, ABC, Justia.org, Investigation Discovery, and more. As always, everything I've used is linked down below or in a Google Doc that you can get to so you can read it all. But for trigger warnings today, it's going to be tough. We got sexual assault. We've got a lot of talk about body mutilation, unfortunately. Murder, dismemberment, cannibalism, and even some potential horse trauma, if that's triggering to you. Not intense, but it is there. So,
oh, come on.
So please take care of yourself, because the ATFDC fam wouldn't be the same without you. But let's get into it.
Okay.
So while we don't know the exact date, Omima Arif was born in Cairo, Egypt, in either 1967 or 1968. Omima was one of 16 children and lived in extreme poverty. Like 16. That's a lot of kids. That's a classroom.
Oh, that's too many kids. Mm-hmm. That's so many kids.
Her father, an alleged and seeming POS in his own right, was abusive and did some abhorrent things that led Omima's mother to divorce him, which left Omima, her mother, and two of her sisters to live on their own in Egypt. They moved to an area of Cairo so impoverished it was called the City of the Dead.
Oh.
There were seemingly 500,000 people living there around the time, and this part of the city got its nickname because all of the houses, literally all of them, were surrounded by graves. Like, filled graves.
That's terrifying.
And this was not good, as you probably already know. But in Egypt, there's a very interesting culture that mixes some traditions and values of ancient Egypt with today. And technically, by Wikipedia, I'll say, Islam is the recognized religion of Egypt, which I bring up because it'll come into play later today. And while Egypt has changed a lot since its creation, again, in the 7th century, holy shit, especially near the Sudanese border where Omima was born, there were some considerably tumultuous things that were normal enough that Omima had to deal with more than a few of them, and culturally it was just kind of normal.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, poor and struggling and living in a bad part of Egypt, right outside of Sudan during their first civil war, mind you, Omima found herself in a peculiar position. Now, it should be noted, Omima is a hot little thing, okay? She is beautiful. She was someone that men were incredibly taken with, which is what happened when she met Roger Stainbrook while he was visiting or like shortly working in Cairo. Omaima's family was taken with Roger. They loved him. And when he proposed to her, her family thought that, well, he was well off. He was handsome. And she probably wouldn't get another chance to marry an American with money who was in love with her.
Okay.
I'm also unable to confirm for many reasons, but I heard through some of my research that her family also thought she wouldn't find someone who would love her because she wasn't a virgin anymore. Okay. Now, I want to make sure that I say I couldn't see in my sources whether, obviously, I could confirm this because I don't think her family spoke on this later, but also I can't confirm whether or not she was a virgin. I don't know that. But that's kind of the culture that we're looking at here. And they were like, a man who's interested, who has some money, take it.
Okay.
So Roger and Omaima got married while Omaima was the ripe young age of 18.
Okay. And did they get married in Egypt and they moved to the U.S.?
Yes, I believe so. So they do immigrate. Well, Omaima immigrates. Roger comes home to the United States. And Roger returning home included him bringing Omaima to Southern California, which is where they settled. And as much as their love seemed to really spark when it began, it must not have caught on too quickly because the two divorced not long after. I believe like 2 years.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So not super long. But now Omaima's here. And at this point, alone. And I just, you know, taking a moment. She's alone. The only person she knew she is divorced from. And she likely doesn't speak the language super well at this point. I think she's learning, but like it's been 2 years and she grew up in Egypt.
Right.
Omaima's just like trying to figure it out. But she did kind of hit an unknowing jackpot. Because again, truly, she is beautiful. And she found that she drew a lot of attention here as well as home. That's how she started modeling. But also how she found steady income revenue in the form of sugar daddies.
Okay.
Now, I want to be clear. It doesn't appear from anything I saw that Omaima was doing sex work, but more that she attracted and was attracted to older men with money. Could it be a security thing? Maybe. Could it just be for money? Also possible. But it didn't appear to be transactional where like an hour or a service cost a certain amount. That was just what she was looking for in who she spent her time with.
Okay.
Around this time, Omaima started nannying also, which kind of allowed her to like survive on her own. And in Costa Mesa, California, Omaima was working and doing her thing. The only interesting thing to note here that I found was that while she was doing this, when she would go out to like do her sugar baby thing, she went by the names Ishta or Nadia. So she was using a different name for those nights.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the only thing I could see that pointed to it maybe being like more transactional of like it's not long enough that you're using your real name. But
right.
For reasons we'll talk about later, I don't think that it was necessarily sex work as you'd think about it by definition.
Okay.
So fascinating, but not the point. So this is kind of Omaima's life for like 3 years or so until she meets her man's the real deal. The one she knew she loved. And in October of 1991, 23-year-old Omaima met alleged love of her life, 56-year-old William Edwin Nelson, who went by Bill.
56?
Yeah. 23. Yeah.
Got it.
So a little more than twice her age. But she loved him.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Alleged.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill was an interesting, intriguing older gentleman, and the two hit it off while playing pool at a bar near the coast, I guess. Bill lived in Costa Mesa, but he worked as a pilot in Texas for a long time. So I don't know if he kind of like traveled back and forth, but I know a lot of his family still lived in Texas, and I think he was just doing some work in California.
Mm-hmm.
His family had like a farm of some kind. I want to say like a cattle farm, but wherever he was, and whatever it was in, it was lucrative. He was making dough, you know? And they just hit it off and everything started going really great for the two. They started discussing marriage almost immediately, and it made sense that then they'd go and meet Bill's family.
Hmm.
He wants to introduce her.
So they go to Texas to meet the family.
They sure do. And Bill had a big old family, including an ex-wife, Kathy, quite a few children, and I believe like 17 grandchildren.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
And I wonder, were his grandkids or his kids her age at all, maybe?
She was younger than some of his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And while I'm not sure if Kathy was there, given the whole ex of it all, Bill did bring Omima home to meet everyone. And initially, as you might expect, the kids were a little on edge. Again, she was younger than some of them were, and their dad was loaded. So many of them thought it was just for the money. And while it was unclear if everyone was fully convinced by the end of the visit, many of them really grew to like Omima. The couple was like lovey-dovey and very affectionate with each other. But something else happened that they talk about, like kind of winning them over, which makes me laugh a little bit. I'm not sure if the idea was that if she was a gold digger, she must be like stuck up or kind of like a princess or like, mm-hmm. I don't know, high maintenance or something.
Yeah.
But the furthest was true about Omima. They went horseback riding on this visit. Here's the horse trigger warning. They went horseback riding on this visit and she got bucked off by a horse pretty bad.
Oh.
Like pretty bad. And as someone who grew up in the closet, not because I was gay, but because I was a horse lover and refused to be a horse girl, TM. I have a lot of respect for horses.
You're like, I was gay and out, but I did not want people to know.
No, you can't know that I'm a horse girl, but you can know that I'm gay. That's fine.
horses are beautiful. That's just, you know what gets me? It's those fake riding things.
What fake riding?
You know when people have, they're like the play on the stick and then they really do go and gallop. And
no,
they
but
really,
that's not a horse.
No, 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 I know, but like it's a horse girl thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
I get
you're
that.
not a horse like into it. And that listen to each their own. That is what I will say. To each their
I
own.
Get that.
I'm not passing judgment. It's just simply not something I'm doing.
It's also not something I understand as a horse girl myself, self proclaimed. I don't get it, but I'm sure that it has its own thing. I've heard that it's a good workout. I think they did it on Good Mythical Morning.
I feel like it's not dissimilar to people who play Quidditch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean?
I sure do.
And you would sooner find me on a Quidditch team.
Yes. Understood.
Than jumping over whatever it is that they're jumping over. So I'll leave you with that.
I just think real horses, living ones, giant living beings, are fascinating. They're so sensitive.
And they're very beautiful.
Some of the most therapeutic animals that you can experience, like hang out with, be
it's
with.
True.
They're so receptive because they're a herd animal. And typically, like, if you are riding a horse or you are sort of like dealing with a horse at a farm, it takes you to be the leader. Horses are kind of cool because they don't have the ability to think abstractly, which is why if you see someone quote unquote breaking a horse, they're running around in a circle and the person's in the middle because the horse will constantly think that you're just running faster than it.
Oh,
it's like, how'd you get in front of me again? Oh, fuck. How'd you get in front of me again? Oh, fuck. How'd you get in front of me again? Which is like a little bit mean, but kind of funny. But they're just very sensitive and they're very intuitive and they're very responsive. And there's something very empowering about slightly moving your body and having like 1,000-pound animal be receptive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get along with almost every animal, but specifically cranky ones. And I understand that a horse that is cranky is likely to buck someone off. And that is not, that's not a problem. That can be
very dangerous.
It can be very dangerous. You can get a lot of injuries from that.
Yeah, not great.
And again, I usually do okay with cranky animals, like my lovely demon cat. But I know that any animal, and specifically any horse on the wrong day, you see a field mouse come out and they're spooked. They're 1,000 pounds, but they think that mouse is going to do something, you know? And so a full buck is no joke. And I guess when Omima got bucked off, immediately Bill's kids were like, oh my gosh, we got to get you to a hospital. We got to get you looked at. Are you going to be okay? Like, let us help. Let's take care of you. And she was like, do you guys have aspirin? I'm fucking fine.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, she was fine. But I think that kind of turned a lot of them on to her where they're like, oh, you're not going to be stuck up.
Yeah.
Like, you're a real person. Like, you can get down with it or whatever.
Right.
So again, I don't know if this was taken as proof that she wasn't like needy or dramatic, but it did seem to win her some points.
Yeah.
And at the end of their visit, Bill was ready to tie the knot. So on the way home, the two stopped in either Las Vegas or Phoenix. It depends on where you look. And got married in early November 1991.
Okay.
So just like a month after they met.
Goodness.
Like if we give, and I don't know what day they met, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they met October 1st, 1991.
Uh-huh.
They're married early November 1991.
That is quick.
Quick.
All right.
Their ceremony reportedly had some Egyptian cultural roots and took in things from her culture as well as his.
Were her family there?
I don't believe so. I think all of her family was still back still in Cairo.
Still living in. Okay.
But things were going really well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume it probably took a little bit of time to get settled in, but they did.
And they lived happily ever after. And this was just a really happy case that you wanted to share with us. And yeah. That nothing bad happened and you were just kidding about the whole upset stomach of it all.
Yeah, I really was. You're so right.
Thank you.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as they got settled in and things were still going really well, Thanksgiving came on November 28th of 1991. And Bill talked to his kids on the phone. They said they were having a good time. They asked how him and Omima were doing. And he said, we're having a great day. Things are going awesome. We love Thanksgiving. We're just hanging out. But that was the last time that any of Bill's relatives heard from him.
On Thanksgiving Day?
Yes. So on December 1st, a few days later, the next that we hear about the two is from an ex-boyfriend named Richard Gray that Omima found. And it could have been an ex-boyfriend or like a situationship. I don't know, mm-hmm. You know. But she found him in Anaheim. And he refused to listen to her story and sent her away. But he called the cops because her story was fucking wild. They promised to check it out because even if Richard didn't listen to it, he must have known enough to say, this seems bad.
Yeah.
And the cops didn't get there until like the day after. Or so to check it out.
Okay.
And I don't know what Richard said. Maybe it was like, hey, this is weird. You should look. Whatever it was, they didn't drop everything to go over.
Mm-hmm.
But on early December 2nd, the next day, Omima found another ex-boyfriend or ex-situationship, Jose Esquivel, and frantically explained to him that she needed help. And he listened. She had injury marks all around her body, including ligature marks, and she looked in a bad way. Omima explained that her husband raped her, and after tying her up for some bondage play, which seemingly turned bad, Omima was able to break free and attacked him, but it led to his death. And she said she hit Bill with a lamp and repeatedly stabbed him with scissors and hit him with an iron. Jose said, oh my God, I will help. And I'll happily call the police for you. And Omima suddenly turned cold.
Okay.
She said, no, I don't need their help. I need help getting rid of him. He's already chopped up and in bags. I just need help removing his teeth so that he can't be identified and taking the trash bags somewhere else.
Oh, honey, no.
Yeah. She also offered him $7,500 and various appliances for helping her.
Oh, honey, no.
Oh, honey, yeah.
No.
And to his credit, Jose said, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
I'll get my truck and be right over. And then he called the police too.
Honestly, smart man though.
Yep.
All right.
And while Omima went home, probably thinking she'd really done something, he went to the payphone and called the cops.
Yeah, as he should.
Yeah. And so that brings us to later that day, December 2nd of 1991, when police showed up at Omima's house. Or technically Bill's house or Omima, I don't know, wherever they were staying together. I think it was an apartment, but I don't know if she had like any right on the lease or anything like that. But But again, they're married, so I guess what's his is hers. So yeah. Their apartment. Not the point. But the police show up and they took a look around. And it didn't take long before they went, oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Something's wrong here.
Yeah.
Because it was a mess, you know. And that's fine. Who among us doesn't get, you know, a laundry pile from time to time? But that wasn't the kind of mess that it was. And they found the bed, which did have restraints on it and a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And initially, this made them think what Jose told them that Omima reported was true. Like, there clearly was a struggle. There's restraints set up. She has ligature marks on her.
Mm-hmm.
But as they moved further throughout the home, other things seemed to be more disturbing.
Mm.
So I'm going to issue a trigger warning here, basically from now until the end of the episode.
This early, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
So just jot that down. Anything you hear from now on out might make you nauseous, might also give you nightmares. Speaking for a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Detectives now have called this one of the most horrific cases of their entire career. One of the detectives, now a senior district attorney, reported going into that apartment and it being the most gruesome murder the county had ever seen.
Oh my.
So in the home, there were trash bags and suitcases absolutely soaked through with blood with human remains in them. On the stove, in a fry cooker, were Bill's hands.
What?
Yep, his hands were in a fry cooker.
This sounds like Catherine Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway.
Except she didn't try to feed it to kids.
Yeah, hands.
Hands. His hands were in a fry cooker. I've heard, again, I didn't see a specific report, but in one of the coverages of this case, I heard that they were holding another kind of meat, like maybe like a pot roast or something.
Like his hands, like in his hands, he was like holding
in
something.
In his hands, they were holding it, but the hands were cooked as well as the other thing.
All right.
So that's rough.
It doesn't sound like she really needs Jose.
No, I mean, she's really done a good job chopping shit up.
I feel, I feel like she didn't, she could have figured out the teeth thing on her own.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me about that, about the whole teeth thing of it all, is like, I know that teeth can be hard to remove, I've heard, you know? I don't know if that's the case after you've cooked a head.
Mm.
But his head was cooked,
mm-hmm.
and it was in the fridge.
Okay.
So they found that as well.
Wait, so cooked as in like in the oven?
Yeah.
Okay. And then she was going to save it for later, probably to put
TBD?
Like leftovers in the fridge.
Maybe.
Like trying to wrap my head around what could possibly be going through. Like if it's a Dahmer thing, like you kind of, okay, if the point was to maybe eat or try.
Yeah.
And like own essentially people that would be sex slaves and then when they accidentally died being like, well, I can do something with this
protein. Yeah.
This seems different.
TBD. I think it, I believe that she probably ate some of him. And we'll get to that. I don't know why you would otherwise cook and then preserve somebody.
Well, yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Like I think it was one or the other.
Uh-huh.
But it was both. So that's what they found in the fridge after they found his hands in the fry cooker. And when detectives looked around the bags of the remains, they noticed that there was so much damage. They couldn't originally identify who was in the bags until they found, obviously, the Bill's head in the fridge.
To kind of identify who it was? I mean, you probably
assume.
Yeah, to
put two and two together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this? Like, we're at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're heading into this right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a police officer. You're just on your, you know, maybe there's a welfare check. Maybe you think that she's struggling with mental health and maybe somebody might be hurt. And then this is what you see.
Yeah.
And it's the holiday. You know what I mean? Like, there's a different feeling in the air in December.
You just had Thanksgiving. You're looking forward to Christmas.
Yeah. Like, you have leftovers in your own fridge at home. I'm just trying to imagine what they might have, like, the headspace they might have been in when they first were like, all right, we got to check on this. And yeah. then to find that.
Yeah.
Sorry, keep going.
And Bill's a big man. He's both tall and just, like, large. He's, like, a hefty man. And okay. so they found out eventually over time, but I think it makes sense to put here, that as the remains that they found were so sort of chopped up and missing, they didn't initially find out, but they did eventually find out that they were missing, like, 80 to 100 pounds of Bill's remains.
Okay.
And also missing was his penis.
Okay.
So they believe she also castrated him.
Oh, no. Do we? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And neighbors claimed that they heard her garbage disposal going for, like, 2 days straight.
Jeez.
But there is some speculation on if she ate more of his remains as well, which I believe she did, and we'll get to that too. I don't think she had all of that.
All 100 pounds in 2 days? Yeah,
I don't think she had all of that, but I do think she had some.
Okay.
So very rightfully so, they take Omima in for questioning.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, hey, the fuck is up with all that? You know?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Jose said that you were assaulted and that you had some self-defense, you know? And she was like, girl, they are so crazy. I didn't do that. I don't know why anyone would tell you that. Bill is on a work trip. He's gone till Sunday. I don't know how to contact him. But listen, both the men who called you, they're just jealous because I'm happily married. And it's not to them. So I don't know why they'd tell you that.
They set up this whole scene in my house.
Yeah.
Just to make you believe that. Isn't that wild?
Mm-hmm. And I will say, one of the podcasts I listened to had an interesting point. They were like, that's so interesting because who's going to, like, call the police to have to give an estate? Like, you're fucking over your whole day. Like, you're going to have to give statements. You're going to have to keep going back. So, like, why are you doing that if you're just jealous?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to post something on Instagram. You're not going to make a police report. But now that's very clearly ain't it. And she soon after recanted. She was like, okay, all right, look. There wasn't really a struggle with Bill. All right, something did happen, but it wasn't his fault. In fact, the apartment was broken into, and it was two women and three men, and they came into the apartment, and they drugged, and they raped Omima, and they killed poor Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, they were trying to frame her by putting his remains in her car and all over the apartment.
They did a really good job making it look like it was her, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did.
They really did.
Sure, Jan.
Yep.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So luckily, Omima was arrested on December 2nd, 1991 for suspicion of murder.
Yeah, that checks out to me.
And it took a year before they got to the trial. But on December 1st of 1992, Omima had her day in court.
That adds up.
Now, I want to be clear about something, and that is, I haven't been clear about everything. Some information in this case comes to light through and after this arrest, which I think makes the most sense to me for it to come out this way, because there are things they learned after while they were investigating, things that she talked about after that make more sense. But before we get into court, let's just catch up with what detectives found out during that year that she was in custody. Okay. And again, one more giant flashing neon red big old trigger warning here for, like, ridiculously graphic details.
Okay.
First, Bill had a past. He actually was in Costa Mesa because he was originally convicted of trying to smuggle 100 tons of marijuana through his piloting job.
100 tons?
Tons.
That's tons of marijuana.
Literally. Do you know how many trucks full of marijuana that would be? He's flying in from Mexico.
Like, we have to remember that tons are weight based. Yep. So this isn't, like, volume. This is just pure, like, poundage.
Yep. 100 tons.
Which is, like, about 2,000 pounds per ton.
Yeah. 200,000 pounds of marijuana.
Pounds. Anyway.
Okay. Listen, he was trying to get his bills met. You know, he has 17 grandkids. I don't know, but that's a lot of fucking marijuana.
Good Lord. Okay.
To try to bring it from Mexico on a plane?
Sir.
Idiot. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Not the point.
So he has a criminal history.
He has a criminal history of like maybe the funniest crime I've ever heard of.
Okay.
But that wasn't all because Omima had a past too. So I just thought I'd throw that in there because I do think it's funny, but that is not the biggest takeaway from this.
Yeah, I don't think the trigger warning was over the 100 tons.
No, it sure wasn't.
Okay.
But Omima had an ex-boyfriend or lover, whatever, that said she had asked him for money. And he, you know, was trying to do his sugar daddy thing. He goes, okay, what would you do? What'd you do for me for it? Like, I'll do that for you. What are you going to do for me?
Mm.
And she was like,
I won't kill you.
She's like, I want to tie you up. And he was like, shit, okay, tie me up. So she did. And then after tying him up, she took out a gun and threatened to kill him if he didn't give her the money.
She didn't lie.
No, she didn't. She didn't want to tie. She didn't want to do anything else.
She did not lie.
And so he was very luckily able to break free and get the gun away from her. And not to mention, there was another event they learned about where Omima was arrested for theft of something sometime back while she was in the States.
Okay.
And while that's not something we condone, that's not the crazy part of this one, because she did get arrested for theft, but as she was being pursued, chased, trying to be caught for this, she did assault one of the women trying to detain her by nearly biting off her entire breast.
What? Entire breast? Mm-hmm. All of it?
Yeah.
Ow. Yeah. What do you mean?
She stole something. They tried to tackle her and she bit a tit.
And wouldn't let go.
Nope. Too toy in that thing.
Okay, so she's got some...
There's some stuff
going on.
There's
some significant mental health.
An entire breast. Sorry.
Yeah. I know, the emphasis on entire...
Entire!
...is really...
The fact that I have to know that it was the entire.
So it wasn't just, like, a bite.
Yeah, not we're just, saying, like, a little gnaw mark. Nope. We're not nipping.
All right, so that's pretty intense.
Yep.
That's not... We don't condone the theft. We do not condone the assault on the officer. We do not condone...
smuggling 200,000 pounds of marijuana into the country.
We don't... Yeah.
But wow. There's a lot there.
There's a lot of moving parts.
And if that's not enough, which I'm going to say it should be. That should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's not enough, they found out more.
Mm.
Because during this investigation process, again, obviously, as they are... able to process more of it, this is when they officially found out that she had castrated Bill as a part of butchering his body. I don't know.
Was he alive?
We don't know that. Oh. Because his remains, unfortunately, were like so badly taken apart and messed with that they weren't really able to find out much about how.
Well, and if they were like cooked and everything, like you add heat and then refrigerate, mm-hmm. like it's gonna mess up any test they would probably try to run.
Right. Oh, and that's no. like that was just some of it. And then obviously they have like 80 to 100 pounds missing. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot they don't know. But they did know, again, she hit him with an iron. That's what she said. They were able to find, I think, like 20 stab wounds on his body.
Okay.
So she stabbed him at least 20 times.
So we can guesstimate how he might have died.
Right. So I'm guessing if that was the attack, that likely anything that came after that was the dismemberment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that that isn't what happened first.
Right.
You know, but there's no real way to know. And lastly, some important information that came out during this trial included some of Omima's personal history in Egypt and some of what she said happened with Bill. And naturally, her prison psychiatrist, or I guess jail because it was pretrial psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Claiming self-defense, Omaima testified that Bill was abusive, but she didn't see it until after they got married.
Okay.
That he would tie her up, he'd make her perform oral sex on him, and she also claimed that he was violent. And violent enough that once he threw her new kitten out the window of the car when she refused to give him oral sex while he was driving.
What?
Yes. I want to note, we don't know if this is true.
I know.
If it is true, it's still very upsetting and he still did not deserve to be murdered. But terribly awful. Yeah. It happened.
Yeah. Horribly, you know? Horrific animal abuse and...
person abuse.
Oh, he should abuse. Be... I don't know. He should have just been in prison for that. So,
and I do think there are cases where people don't show abusive behavior until after marriage or like a long-term commitment that's harder to get out of. And I know that we've talked here before, like abuse doesn't start day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's got to be someone you love in the relationship to get into an abusive relationship.
Yep.
So I'm not discounting that it could happen. I'm just saying we don't have any evidence that it did.
Right.
And this is her self-defense claim. And it should also be noted that most people, if not everyone who knew Bill personally, said this wasn't like him at all. He not only was not a super sexual person from what they knew, and he never struck them as violent, no pun intended. But another weird history bit is that they're uncertain if Omaima's marriage with Bill was technically valid. Because I guess he was... still in the process of getting divorced from his ex-wife, Kathy.
So wouldn't that just be no? Given that you can't marry someone when you're married?
Don't know.
Okay.
I'm assuming no. But that was just a weird thing that came out of it.
Yeah. I mean, not the most important part, but something.
Yeah. But all of this to say, Omaima says that, at least specifically, the castration was in revenge of getting assaulted, and nobody else bought that. I don't think, mm-hmm. But that's what she says. The last fascinating part about this trial was a piece of information that came out from her psychiatrist that she had during this pretrial detention. They noted that she was in the most psychotic state they'd ever seen someone. And that she said some wild things to them in that state.
Yeah.
Including that after killing Bill, she dressed in a red dress and shoes, put on red lipstick, and cooked his ribs like a restaurant would. And she called them tender and sweet, just as she likes them.
Okay.
Omaima now denies saying this, but considering all the other prepared body parts, I don't doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that being said, the psychiatrist also noted that she was in deep psychosis. Again, like one of the most psychotic states he'd ever seen, which is mental health. And had really bad PTSD. And he noted some of the abuse she spoke to in childhood from her father. And this is the part that's going to make you overly queasy, and I have a lot of information on it, so sorry. But part of her childhood trauma included a procedure that's called a female circumcision at the age of 6. A female circumcision is also called female genital mutilation. And we're going to talk about that. And I just want to take a second to talk about this because I am so disgusted and perturbed, yet I needed to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, if I know more, you bet your ass I'm going to tell you what I know. So skip if you get queasy because it makes me queasy and I don't normally get very queasy with this stuff. So according to an article in the National Library of Medicine, female circumcision, or again, this genital mutilation, is practiced to varying extents in different parts of the world. Some areas like Africa, and specifically like Egypt, Somalia, and Guinea, have such high prevalence that over 90% of women have undergone this mutilation.
Oh my goodness. Not consensually.
No. And I say mutilation because this is not the same thing as a male circumcision. And to be honest, like, I don't even know why we're touching what God gave you, but like, do what you want to do. Historically, at least male circumcision has some medical benefits. To my knowledge, it is incredibly rare that female circumcision has any medical benefits to it at all. Historically, female circumcision or this genital mutilation is attributed to Islam And I wanted to mention this because until I did my deep dive, I didn't know that it wasn't specifically for this faith, although it does occur in some places with Islam influence and overlap. But officially, like, religious authority figures have said that there's nothing that condones this in the Islam religion, which I just thought was interesting.
But it's almost always prevalent in places where that religion is predominant.
That's what it seems like.
Okay.
And that's what a lot of people attribute it to. And I haven't really found anything that they're claiming would influence it instead. I just know that they're saying we don't condone it.
Okay.
So I don't know. But however, from anything faith given, again, none of their religious principles, they say, isn't like a requirement or whatever. And again, unlike a male circumcision in which the foreskin is removed typically during infancy or under anesthesia, and after which a man can still participate in sex and find it pleasurable, even if it's with like less nerve endings, you're still active and capable and you can still enjoy yourself, you know? Except female circumcision is disastrous for both the body and the mind. Women under the age of 15 are targeted for this, and it can happen at any time. So like, it's not like you turn five and it happens. It's not like you're a baby and this happens. Like, you could be a freaking 14-year-old and taken for this to happen. While I'm sure it's case by case, it appears that anesthesia or pain medication is generally not considered for women who undergo this. And culturally, it frequently appears to be at the request of a father or a significant man figure in a woman's life.
But not her. Okay.
And according to that National Library of Medicine article, it has been cited for various reasons. And I'm going to include the ones that they noted for why it's done. So they said it's done for protection and proof of virginity, purifying or cleansing the woman, a prerequisite for becoming a full woman, preventing sexual pleasure, protecting women from hysteria or over-masturbating, protecting women from depression, insanity, and kleptomania, and preventing sexual desire, ensuring a high social status, and preventing infertility.
Okay, so I really don't see how this helps with anything.
And just to give you like a sec to process, like, what the fuck is that about?
So I took a class in college where we focused on this a lot. And there were interviews with women who this had happened to who had left the places because they weren't allowed to talk about it where they were. So that finally we're in a place where they were free to do that. And they talked about just how horrific it was and that it happened to everybody and that their parents were the ones that were essentially like signing them up for it, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And that it was other women doing it to the women typically. With not a single, like, really nothing medical or clinical about it. It seemed very like back alleyway, like underground medical practice kind of thing. And it was designed to make it so that women did not enjoy sex and so that they would not be inclined to have sex outside of marriage or before marriage or be anything really other than seemingly property.
Yes.
At that point, like, to behave as they are told to, not as they might have chosen.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little more about like what kinds there are and what this does to people, but any motivation noted for this makes no sense. I'm so sorry. You want to remove her clit because you don't want her to steal things?
Yep.
Huh?
Yep.
Huh?
Like, what do you mean? That doesn't make sense to you?
No, but I guess I don't get turned on by stealing things. You know, maybe that's a me thing. Who knows?
It's just but like, I mean, that's not to say that that doesn't exist, but that is, please do not insult us by telling us that's the reason.
Yes. Literally, and like none of these make sense. And again, there's no scientific evidence connecting this procedure to any of those ideals alone. But this article, I have it linked. You should really read it. It's fascinating. It says that also, unlike male circumcision, not only is there nothing to connect it to the reasons they say they're doing it, but there's also no health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
This only leads to both short and long-term consequences, some of which medically directly oppose the quote-unquote reasons for making a girl have them.
So it's a medical procedure for a social concept.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So not only can this lead to infection and death, it can lead to the inability to urinate, which we'll talk about, increases neonatal deaths and pregnancy complications, or just creates straight infertility, renal failure, and significant trauma and mental health. But also, it doesn't just remove pleasure from sex for these poor women. It actually ensures that sex is specifically painful. So it's not just like, oh, you're not going to like it. It's like, no, it's going to be a bad time for you. Which, if we think just biologically, makes sense, because even without scar tissue and how that could settle and press on nerves or make things uncomfortable, if mm-hmm. you're not getting turned on, your body isn't preparing your body for intercourse. And I doubt, again, I could be wrong, but I doubt that the kind of men that are interested in having a wife with this procedure are going to be using copious amounts of lube to deal with this.
It just seems like it's more of a punishment yes. than it is for anything else.
Which means it's not just the procedure that's a punishment. It's now every single time you'd have relations within your marriage or right. with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And just so we're on the same page, there are technically four kinds of female circumcision, but one is just considered other. So
right.
Of the three that I looked at, of all of them, there is only one instance where it's shown to provide help, and that's to a very small percentage of women who, through puberty, their clitoris becomes completely hooded. And not like they were born that way. Some people are born with a hooded clit, but like it's the way you evolve or something, and it kind of creates an uncomfortable pressure. And in that case, the only kind of benefit is if you were to remove the excess skin on top only,
mm-hmm.
which would relieve the pressure. But that is such a vast minority of women. And that is also almost never what this procedure is. Because right. when you look at a female circumcision, typically what you see is an entire removal of the clitoris. So not the hood, like the whole structure.
Mm.
And then there's another type that does that and also removes the labia minora. So removes some skin. And then the most extreme kind does both of those things, as well as sewing together the labia majora, leaving just a, and this is a actual fucking quote from this article, leaving a small hole for urine and menstrual fluid.
Of the same hole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're sewing over everything. Uh-huh. So if you're peeing, it's going down before it's going out.
Oh.
Which is why some women are unable to urinate after this. Some women have renal failure because it backs up your kidneys.
Oh.
And I think it's even, if they're saying a small hole for menstrual fluid, that also makes me think it's over part of the vagina as well, which I also don't see how that would help with pregnancy complications. I think that would make it worse,
significantly worse, and the delivery of a child to be seemingly impossible.
Yeah,
vaginally. So C-section or nothing,
which is why this medically leads to pregnancy complications or neonatal death.
But what do you mean? It's supposed to help with infertility.
Allegedly.
Okay.
And so again, this can shut down kidneys. It can literally lead to infection. It can lead to death. So it sews over as close to everything as physically possible to not kill a woman. And it, even at that point, it still fucking does sometimes. At this current point in, I think it was June of 2025, the article I read, it's the fourth leading cause of death in women in Africa.
Oh.
And it's comparable to the amount of combat-related death tolls every year in Africa. And just to drive it home, all beyond the one kind of half version of this that is helpful for a very, very minor percentage of women, female circumcision breaks all major ethical principles according to the National Institute of Health, which are justice, autonomy, beneficence, and non-malfeasance.
Yep.
Yep.
And they're not using medical equipment. I think that's a really important piece here. It is like a kitchen knife. It is a single razor blade.
Glass shards.
It is whatever is available.
By someone with no medical experience.
These are not performed by doctors. This is like more of a religious ceremony type thing, or like a, it's like a preferably hidden, I don't even want to say surgery,
because yeah.
That, I think the word surgery implies that there is some kind of medical
reason
aspect of it, and this just, it's more just torture.
It's just mutilation.
And it is, yeah. And it's designed to be that.
Yeah. And so just again, as a reminder, this can happen to girls up to the age of 15 with no anesthetics. They're usually just being held down while this is happening. And this is what happened to Omaima at 6.
Mm.
And back to court. I don't want you to think that I think Bill's death was justified or warranted in any way. That's not what I'm saying. But I want you to consider, knowing that this is the experience Omaima had and had likely every time there was intercourse, even if it was consensual, it certainly wasn't pleasurable for her. And I think it makes her being in a state of psychosis and having tremendous PTSD significantly more credible and understandable.
Yeah, you see the evidence of how she might have been struggling mentally.
Right. And while her attorneys went forward with the self-defense tactic, I think she may have truly been one of the only genuine cases for an insanity like plea.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think it's that she didn't know what she was doing was wrong. I don't think she really had autonomy over herself.
Right.
At some point. And she later did say she did it because she heard voices telling her to, and that there was some sort of old Egyptian mythology that claimed if a man was castrated, he wouldn't go to heaven or the afterlife. So she believed she'd never have to see him again. And that's why the voices told her to do that.
Okay. So it was like, remove him from this life, remove him from what's after this.
Right. Too. You will never have to see him again, honey. You're okay.
Okay. And they weren't even technically married.
Probably not. I think they both thought they were.
Yeah. Or at least like, and
she did.
Yeah, okay. Then maybe the commitment level was the same.
Yeah.
And just not legally, but I know she wasn't in a mental spot to walk away, but it just almost sounds like...
But it was bad.
She, yeah, I did not.
We needed some intervention before this. I think we needed some intervention when she tried to bite an entire breast off of someone. She needs help.
And so did she just get a slap on the wrist for that? And then it sounds like there were really no... implication, like there were no consequences for that action, and maybe if had there been some of this might have been stopped,
right? Or even some further consequences that led more people to have more time with her to hear how poorly she was doing. Maybe she would have gotten help. Regardless, I don't think this needed to happen. I think there were enough things that led up to it that someone should have been like, hey, things don't seem right here, and either you're doing it on purpose or you're really not well.
Mm-hmm. Both need to be addressed, though. Yep. Regardless of the reason,
it needs to be addressed.
It's not okay. Yes. So,
now, again, with all the changing stories and trying to cover it up and history of aggression, that does raise a lot of doubt for people when it comes to, like, how was her mental health? What was this? It should be noted that after all of this came out, she did actually get a reduced charge, and she did not get convicted of first-degree murder, but second-degree.
Okay.
Which allowed her to be sentenced to 25 years to life with the possibility of parole. And again, this is California that she's in.
So she'll be out in 10.
You'd think, actually.
Yes, I would.
After last week, or I guess our last episode, you'd really think She's still incarcerated.
Okay.
So there's a little hope.
Because after what happened with Alan Showery.
Four fucking years.
The max of it being basically 14 years. But we're like, let's take a decade off of that. Who needs it? Why not? It's just.
Serve four, get 10 free.
Yeah. It just seems so backwards when we look at, you know, the time we've incarcerated nonviolent offenders. And then the pendulum swung so far in a way where significant violent offenses are like, meh.
Whatever.
Not only are we not going to have there be consequences, but we're also not going to like offer treatment.
We're not even going to enforce the ones that we put down.
Yeah. Like that maybe instead of just not, you know, the deterrent of the time, we might also have the treatment to redirect the behavior. But instead it was like, actually, what if we didn't?
Yeah. So luckily that's not the case here. Mm-hmm. But Omaima has been incarcerated since 1993. And I don't know exactly when she became eligible for parole the first time, but she has been denied parole multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, she's done over 30 years now of time.
This is noted under the reason that she still shows no remorse for what she's done and she will take no accountability, still only claiming self-defense and other people also calling what she was in psychosis. Mm-hmm. Omaima herself says that she's reformed and not a threat to anyone now. But like, who wouldn't say that if they could get out?
100% Bundy would have said that.
Right.
Not saying she's Bundy, but I don't exactly say, oh, well, if you say it, then.
Right.
You know, please, someone get the keys.
Also interesting because this was right around the time that everything with Dahmer was coming out. People were calling her the female Dahmer. Which I get the connection. But to my knowledge, she only tried to cook one person. And well, that's not better, but it's not the same.
Yeah. And I mean, because, well, Dahmer died in the 90s, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would, like, reinvigorate the case because he was active in, like, what, the 70s, 80s?
I think so. 70s, 80s sounds right.
We haven't covered Dahmer yet. Do you guys want us to? After this, I don't know, man. Do you?
This is rough and this is one.
Yeah.
But we could do some Dahmer coverage. So rude. But of the other interesting updates that have happened since then, Omaima has attempted to appeal her case twice. In my opinion, oddly helping her case for like an insanity plea. Mm-hmm. Because both were due to the same complaint. And the first was that she appealed under the grounds that she had been provided ineffective counsel for not using the insanity plea. Like she said they were wrong for not using that. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. But the second was that her Sixth Amendment right was violated. That's also linked up top. That's the justia.org. It's the whole appeal. Because her defense counsel allegedly refused to plea her not guilty by reason of insanity.
Okay.
So that is her kind of saying, like, I asked them to and they wouldn't do it. Instead of just like they were dumb and they didn't on their own. What frustrates me personally is just that from a justice standpoint, both of these were dismissed under the grounds of timeliness, which the first appeal came in 2002, so nine years after her trial. And given what we know about Omaima and that she grew up for the first 18 years of her life in Egypt and then did what she did, I personally don't know how I feel about her having like a time limit on her first appeal. Like, if that is a right she has that she learned about later or didn't fully comprehend or didn't understand that what happened to her might have fit that, I could understand that.
But legislatively, if there's a law that says you can't appeal on that basis after a certain time,
right,
it's automatically donezo.
Yeah. And the second one, I don't have a problem with as much. Like the first one I do only because I'm like, she might still be learning the system and what she's entitled to as someone going through it. But the second one, she tried to appeal after the Supreme Court identified part of your Sixth Amendment rights in a case in 2018. And there was a law when that got passed that anything that was going to be appealed on those grounds had to be appealed within a year of them making that choice. And she appealed it 3 years after. So that one I kind of get because that's like a new thing. That's like an addition where they're saying, okay, and also this is something you're entitled to. If you want to like appeal on that grounds, do it now.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Right. But considering they're both for the same thing, and I honestly do think she could have been a candidate for that, I'm kind of like, can we get this girl into a hospital?
Yeah.
Can we get her some help? I hope they're giving her help. I don't know what she's participating in while she's incarcerated, but
right.
She has been denied parole. With all of that being said, the last word on Omaima I saw is that she's up for parole again next year in 2026. So,
oh geez,
we'll see what happens. I kind of doubt she'll ever be released, but honestly, even if they released her to a mental health facility, I'd be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Get the girl some help. I don't know what's going on, but there's something going on.
A residential.
Oh no,
mental health facility.
Residential living.
Specify that.
Yeah, I want constant supervision still. I don't think we should have no supervision. I'm not
that,
there yet.
That checks out.
But lastly, just to wrap it up, what happened to Bill Nelson was a tragedy, and his family and friends certainly had an unnecessary and crushing loss. But I also wanted to end today with just a little call to action. As a woman with the luxury of having either not known or processed what female circumcision was until adulthood, I wanted to highlight the Orchid Project. If the details of today's case did anything, I think it shows the true cost of violating a woman's body as a child because you feel like it and expecting it not to wreak havoc on her. And not only can it potentially devastate a woman's body and mental health, but it's possible that some of the impacts of this are what led her to act how she did and could lead other people to have the same kind of struggles. And while her actions are her responsibility, and I think knowing what she went through certainly made me process this in a different light, but not dismiss it, I hope that less and less women have to die from this every day, and less women have to go through it every day. And the Orchid Project seeks to provide research, resources, and bring awareness to female genital mutilation or circumcision, and has seen data-driven results that in some of their efforts, they are helping lower the frequency of this practice and created more safe spaces for women to access care in the countries that these occur in. If you can't donate money, I would heavily suggest just donating some time by looking into this and reading up on something that kills 5 girls every hour. That will be linked in the show notes below. And that for you, my friends, is what I have on Omaima Nelson and the death of Bill Nelson.
I did not know we were heading there today.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
At any point, do we believe that Bill was in fact abusive?
I don't know.
We don't know enough to know for sure.
Yeah. Part of me thinks it's possible. But also part of me thinks that even if he thought it was consensual, it could be taken as abuse given the amount of pain she was in that he probably wouldn't know about.
And if she was in that deep of a psychosis, we just, her perception of reality is not accurate.
Right.
So it could have been very real to her. And it could have also not been true. And those things can exist at the same time.
Right. So that's kind of what I think is most likely. I think it is possible that he was. I also think it's possible that she was trying to cover her ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be true. I think it's most likely that she perceived it to be, even if it wasn't. I don't think it's as much her trying to cover her ass because she's saying some wild shit that I'm like, girlfriend.
Yeah, I think if she was trying to cover her ass, she wouldn't say that she put on a red dress with red shoes and cooked his ribs as they would at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I think that's coming from a different...
That's a different place.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Yeah, they're not on the same street, you know? They're just...
No, I don't think they're in the same realm.
No. So we have that.
So we have that. I'm glad that she is still under supervision. I hope that whatever that supervision is, she's getting some help for whatever's going on and that they can, I don't know. I don't honestly know if there's any intervention for after this happens. Like, is there anything to relieve the pain after female genital mutilation. I don't know.
Can you undo this? Not the removal piece, but like the sewing together part?
I have no idea. And I would hope so.
For with like, all the renal and like bladder problems that they would like that you would you can't have even pee. From that, like it, an infection and just all of the things that it just seems like that is not a, oh, once it heals, you're good. It seems like a lifelong complicated, I don't know, the results of that torture, like you don't get to escape that. I can't even gather my words right. I think I just sound like a mumbling idiot, but it is horrific and it's barbaric, and so many of us can't even imagine that, and that's happening probably as you're listening.
Well, according to that Orchid project that I had read into for a while, this happens to a girl every 12 minutes. His like on average. So while we've been talking alone, consider it 6 or 7.
My goodness.
And that is nauseating to think about. But I also think, just like what you're saying, it's not a one-time torture. It is a torture, but it's not a one-time mutilation. It's anything that could go wrong likely does. And then you wonder why these women have unbearable, like, physical experiences in their body. And also your mental health is going to reflect that. Every day is pain.
And
you can't even pee.
And not just pain, but that sort of specific localized pain.
Yep.
Of the things that they, you know, maybe they wanted to have kids. Maybe they wanted, maybe they didn't. Maybe they wanted to have sex. Maybe they don't. Like, it just, you take that away from somebody to be able to choose that. As a child, as a baby.
And then you have this traumatic memory because they're not putting you out. You're there for all of it. You're being held back while somebody digs into you with a glass shard.
Likely by people that you know and trusted.
And then you're supposed to not have like a PTSD attack every time it hurts. Like, you're not going to remember that experience from when you were 11.
Nope.
But also, and this is not to make light of this at all, I do think it's a little funny, personally, in kind of a grand scheme way, that they do claim one of the reasons for this is to reduce kleptomania, and she did get arrested for stealing. So I'd like to use this as evidence against that reason.
Also, yeah, all right. No, I was wondering where you were going with that. Ineffective. But okay. Yep. Doesn't seem great. And the gnawing on a titty seems a little...
a little tough.
A little not... great, but that, oh, that's just like a blaring red flag of like, well, something's going on.
If you're gonna try to bite through an entire breast.
And could you imagine that female officer went home, she was like, you would not believe the day I had.
And you know what? They didn't. They wouldn't. You like, couldn't guess it.
Like that. Like, I'll give you 5 guesses. You know?
Guess
like,
what happened at work today?
It's just a different, you know what I mean? Like, that's so odd. And I guess if you really don't want to be detained, you will do anything to like try to stop it. But
I mean, I've seen full grown men pretend to go boneless like a toddler and then fake a seizure. And I mean, fake a seizure.
You have seen that.
Yeah. I've seen people do some stuff to get out of this. I don't think I've ever seen someone try to bite through a boob.
Well, and like, what about like, was hopefully she's wearing a vest? Like, that's tough, man. That's ouch.
Yeah, and then what, you got teeth marks forever? I hope not. I hope Lefty's okay. I don't know if it was her left, but you know what I mean? Like, I hope she's okay.
Yeah, no, this is all around. Sorry, if we don't make a little bit of, I'm going to cry. Yeah, so
it's bad. It's real bad.
We will have those things linked in the episode notes. So if you want to look around, of course, our sources always will be, but we'll have a resource listed as well.
Yes.
I've never heard of this case. I would not have thought it happened here.
No.
Just given
California,
who'd have thunk it? But that is incredibly terrible for his family too, to just find out not only that your loved one is gone, and untimely. So he was still young. He was maybe late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, young, and to die. We don't know all the circumstances of it, but just to find out that that's what, just like how desecrated your loved one was after that. And even when you maybe want to lay them to rest, I don't know what their like preferences were with that, but just knowing that you don't even have all of them because there were some that was confirmed to be missing is just heartbreaking in a different way for the family. That you're doing the best that you can with what is left, and that is just another added trauma of feeling like you can't even give that to your loved one is just terrible.
And I think too, like, you know, he just, from my understanding, had been released not super long before that for the whole 200,000 pounds of marijuana thing. So I'm sure they didn't get like a ton of quality time before this. I just feel so bad for them. And to have met her, and for a lot of them to be like, okay, actually I can get down with this.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sucks. That would be a slap, you know?
Yeah. I think if your father is in a relationship with somebody younger than you, I won't pretend to know what that's like. I don't. I feel lucky that I don't know that. But that has got to be hard in a multitude of ways. And then to get to the point where maybe you might actually like her.
Yep.
Is probably difficult to get to that point as well. And then to have this happen and like kind of flip all of that upside down is another layer of all of like, and it's not just she killed him, but the manner in which everything. And there's so many layers to that is just so bad. So we will include all of the information that we talked about today in the episode notes so you can see it. Aren't you guys glad we're back?
Wow.
Did you miss us, you little shits? Did you?
And we started this with Thanksgiving talk.
We did do that. You just hold on to your butts now.
Yeah, I guess we are back. We are
hitting the ground running.
Truly sprinting. And I'm sorry because I'm queasy talking about it now. I was queasy when I wrote it. It's bad.
I'll be queasy for the rest of the day. It's good.
It feels real bad.
It does.
But it also feels like something that really should be talked about because it feels real bad to even hear about.
Yeah. The fact that we get uncomfortable hearing about what is going on right now is...
To 97% of women in Guinea? That's insanity.
That is just horrific.
But... do look into those things. Take a look at our Instagram. We have all the people, the places, the things, including pictures of Omaima. And I could really only find one of her and Bill together, but that will be in there. And if you wanted to see some of the other stuff we have, if you wanted to go find a little giggle, a little levity after all of this, we have a great reprieve section set up. Allie runs a tight ship on that Instagram. Is a great place to kill a couple hours.
You could do that.
Yes. And you'd be laughing, you'd be crying, you'd be having a blast.
Learning.
But if you wanted to do anything else, you could go to our link tree. You could find where you could leave us a 5-star review, a comment. You could donate on PayPal or Venmo. That's linked there. You could look at Redbubble for some merch. Send us an email. Send us a DM. Show us more of your really cute pet costumes. We are obsessed with them.
Yes, please.
And we love you. And we hope you have a good week.
We do hope that. And we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time. So if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Oh, geez, Anne.